Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to today's edition of the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm your host, John Still, and I'm delighted to be joined today by our COO, Lindsay Rountree. Lindsay, welcome.
Lovely to be here with you, just the two of us.
As I said yesterday,
the rest of the team didn't turn up.
It's
fine.
That's it. You know, I think we'll go into why it's such a busy time for us and why there's only you and I hosting the pod today. But no, like I said yesterday, we'll have a lovely chat as we always do.
We definitely will.
So we're going to have a few different strands of conversation today. We're going to talk a little bit about Walmart's acquisition of Vibeco, a little bit about AppsFlyer and their recent raise of $1 billion, and interspersed in all of that, we'll talk a little bit about Cannes and the upcoming ATS Singapore. So I'll kick us off with the news anyway. Walmart is going to acquire Vibeco to expand access to connected TV advertising. And Walmart is acquiring Vibeco, a self-serve CTV advertising platform, for $1.4 billion. The deal is part of Walmart's strategy to build more accessible, full-funnel advertising solutions through its commerce media business, Walmart Connect. Lindsay, as I mentioned, ATS Singapore coming up, you are in charge of the retail media panel there, hence you are the retail media expert today. How do you feel about the deal, the convergence of CTV and retail, and, you know, it's a chunk of change, that $1.4 billion?
It is absolutely massive, and it goes alongside their acquisition of Vizio, which took place in 2024, $2.3 billion. So I think that it's really interesting to see retail media and CTV converge and see where this puts Walmart in terms of kind of where they fit in the market. Like, this now feels like they are more like Amazon than they are a retail media network. So they're definitely going after Amazon, which should be, I suppose, no surprise to anyone that that's kind of like, you know, who they're after. Like, Walmart, when it comes to retail media, Walmart are, outside Amazon, the absolute biggest player. Certainly in the US, certainly in the Western world. and their plans have long been kind of going in a direction of kind of what can we do next? So Vizio plus Vibe is, it creates you can argue it's an almost deliberate stack. You've got, from Vizio, you've got the screen and first party ACR data. And then from Vibe, you've got the self-serve activation layer. And I think what's interesting about this is that this opens up CTV advertising to those smaller budget advertisers. And I saw there was an IAB Digital Video and Ad Spend Strategy Report, this is US focused, that said that small budget CTV advertiser adoption has risen from 60% in 2024 to 85% in 2026. So this plays in really well with what Walmart are trying to do. I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see kind of what they're looking at there. The context of this, when it comes to the, I've had some fascinating conversations with my panelists for the retail media panel in Singapore. ATS Singapore is next Wednesday. Very excited, and this is going to be a really interesting panel. And it's interesting to look at kind of what Walmart are doing in the US versus kind of what the infrastructure looks like in Southeast Asia specifically, because Southeast Asia is extremely fragmented. There's lots of, I say little markets, they're absolutely massive markets, but lots of massive markets that all operate very, very differently, all with different languages. But trying to have like a Southeast Asian retail media strategy is very, very challenging. And you've got the big retail media networks, you know, for example, like locally in Southeast Asia, locally in Singapore, you've got Shopee, you've got Lazada, you've got Tokopedia, and of course you've got Amazon. And you've also got the work of the likes of Watsons and Coles and Woolworths in Australia that are doing some really interesting stuff as well, but nothing on the scale of what Walmart are doing and have been doing. And certainly not, you know, outside of Amazon, not trying to bring CTV into the mix. So I think that this makes it very, very interesting from a walled garden perspective. I wonder what that will do from a fragmentation perspective for the rest of the retail media industry, where there are retail media networks that exist. You know, will it just make them so much smaller in scale that it makes them even harder to buy from? And will there be, you know, in North America in particular, will there just be like, well, there's no point, it's just Amazon and Walmart now, like everybody else may as well just pack up and go home? That's what I find interesting. And the reason I say it like that is because from my conversations with people in Singapore, And the fragmentation is a real challenge. And so they will go and invest in those bigger retail media networks and in Amazon. And also from a social perspective, the likes of TikTok, where they can, you know, have a really sort of strong core is what I was going for. Thought I'd just, you know, save some time and merge the words together. Absolutely. That's me. Some strong core social strategy kind of from the video retail perspective. And that I think is what's interesting about what's happening in Asia versus there's less of that in North America. I've gone off on a tangent. I would go back to what I was saying about retail media networks. It's challenging to buy from smaller ones unless they can offer you scale. And scale is what everybody ultimately wants. And what is missing, certainly from Southeast Asia, is an aggregation layer to be able to help access these smaller retail media networks. And from everyone I've spoken to, the challenge here is there are so many smaller kind of like, you know, corner shops, like little mini supermarkets that have like a chain of like 5 or 10 that operate within, you know, the Philippines or Indonesia or Malaysia. And the people there see an opportunity in retail media, but they don't have a first clue about how to start taking advantage of it. And so you've got like the accountancy team trying to set up a retail media network and try and talk about ad buys. They've got no idea what they're doing. And so having someone there that can bring in the aggregation layer and bring in the expertise and just kind of have them plug their inventory in would make a huge difference to that region. And I think it will make a huge difference in North America region as well. If that's, you know, if it's now just Walmart and Amazon so much further ahead than everybody else and both offering a very specific product, which is CTV and retail combined almost. And we've seen how Amazon use their CTV arm to their advantage when it comes to their retail media, certainly when it comes to advertising. Like, it's that we've talked about in the past, the sort of ads you've seen, John. So from my perspective, I think that puts them like a step above everybody else. So what does everybody else do if they can't compete on the CTV front and can't compete in that kind of like, you know, they're not a retail media network anymore. They're now just a walled garden. Like what does everybody else do? I think that we're like that. That's very much conversations I've had with people in Singapore. That was a lot of rambling. I feel like, but I stand by my points.
Yep, I think you covered the whole gamut of their retail media and CTV. It's such an interesting area to come together, both retail and CTV. As you know, incredibly natural partners, as you mentioned. We've talked a lot about Amazon. You know, they basically have an entire streaming service that is now geared towards the selling of their product. Oh, we're flying today, Lindsay.
aren't we just? Wow. Come on, Singapore.
That's it. We're so close. Of linking to their shopping channel. It can be done by QR code. It can be done at the click of a remote now. I was in Cannes, if you can't tell from my complexion today on the video. I was over in...
And I wasn't, and you can definitely tell from mine.
Yeah, we are both of Scottish backgrounds, and one of us has certainly been in France. So I had a cracking chat with Alex Hole from Samsung Ads, and we talked about the home screen actually in CTV being the new battleground, and that, you know, it links in with retail and the power of connecting them both. Basically, he puts it, you know, the home screen is, it's the place where you automatically land when you turn on your TV before you've spent 45 minutes in the ecosystem of your choosing what to watch and then being served the ads on that. The home screen's the place to own a brand, and that links through to retail. He talked about switching up from endemic brands into the non-endemic and how the sector's opening up, but how for Samsung, the home screen is, you know, it is the next big retail CTV battleground, which I found absolutely fascinating. Do you think, is that the next big thing, this complete conflation of retail and CTV?
I suppose it probably is. I mean, I think that outside of the industry, that you wouldn't believe how important, you know, talk about the home screen, you wouldn't believe how important kind of these owned and operated CTV ecosystems are. Like, you know, Samsung being one, you've got LG, you've got all these different TV brands that it's an absolutely massive industry, absolutely massive opportunity. And I think that, you know, certainly when you look at Walmart, it creates a closed loop measurement, basically. Yeah. Well, maybe it doesn't create closed loop measurement from Walmart perspective, because I think that the way that this works is that while they get the on-screen data from Vizio, they still have a lot of fragmentation because a lot of the audience is actually like, I think it's like 10, like there'll be advertisers because they're going after small scale advertisers. They will be out of the Walmart ecosystem, but they'll be looking at ways to bring them in. And I think that it just makes sense if you look at the way that retail is changing and the way that we are shopping now, that the two do seem to sort of go much more hand in hand. And I think that from a measurement perspective, it makes it much more interesting. I don't think it's going to be amazing yet when it comes to measurement of CTV and retail, but I think that there's going to be some very interesting attribution going on, some very interesting modeling going on. And I think that, you know, we talked about Walmart trying to catch up with Amazon, and Amazon are like 10 times bigger than Walmart Connect. So there's still, the gap is vast, but Walmart have done something really interesting that will make everybody else probably realize the benefit of CTV. And I think that smaller advertisers will certainly kind of go, well, this makes a lot more sense to me to kind of be in both places at the same time. How can I connect the two?
Yeah. Do you think it's sort of a set up and listen moment for the industry that Amazon, or Walmart taking on Amazon here? I know there's oceans between them at the moment, but do you think they can make a play for that? Or do you think they are just going for their own ecosystem?
I think no. Do you think they can? Amazon is so much bigger than Walmart. I don't see it going in that direction. But there's certainly kind of like a sit up and take notice situation going on. I didn't realize Walmart were that big. Okay, I get it now. Like they really are a massive, massive ecosystem. And any of the kind of what we would deem to be larger retailers, will kind of go, oh, okay, like, where Amazon's 10 times the size of Walmart, Walmart Connect is now probably 10 times the size of anything they've got going on, at least 10 times the size. So I think they've created a yawning chasm between themselves and other, what we would consider to be physical retailers, I would have said.
Yeah. So it's not, in answer to your question, I don't think anyone can particularly challenge Amazon on scale at the moment or the size that they've reached. It's, we're playing elsewhere and looking to make gains elsewhere, but it's interesting to see Walmart doing this, and they are, it's Vizio then Vibe. It's, they're not shy about spending on this stuff. They are making a play in this area. It's interesting.
Definitely.
Excellent. I shall move us on to our second news of the day, which is AppsFlyer has raised more than $1 billion in Series E funding at a $2.7 billion post-money valuation in a major investment round backed by advertising and tech leaders Meloco, Google, Meta, and Unity. That's some big players putting money into AppsFlyer there. Lindsay, what do you think of this investment? What do you make of it?
I feel like it's interesting framing around the news. It's obviously four of the world's biggest advertising platforms have basically just bought minority stakes in a company that measures their own performance. And because where AppsFlyer sits, AppsFlyer is supposed to be quite net neutral. It's supposed to be extremely it's supposed to be the kind of the level playing field of measurement across the ecosystem. And so them investing in this, they're saying it's such small scale that it doesn't actually impact neutrality in the slightest. And the stakes are very small, non-exclusive, and structured with explicit protections. But I think that they probably felt they had to come out with something like that, because otherwise, everyone's going to go, well, hang on a second, AppsFlyer is supposed to be neutral here, and you've got all these giant tech platforms investing in you. That's never a good look. There's so much conversation around, oh, my fan's gone off. That's never good. I'm going to burn to death now. I think that it's very, very interesting that there is a lot of backlash about this. And the CEO has even come out and said, this is a vote for independent measurement, not against it. And I think that the fact that you feel you have to come out and say that is very, very telling, because, you've got Google, Meta, Meloco and Unity, and they are investing on the condition that AppsFlyer stays neutral. I don't know if that actually is what's actually happening, or what's kind of been the party line they've had to be spun to kind of to get the point out there. And I think, because those four platforms own so much ad inventory, like we said, kind of in the mobile app ecosystem, all being measured in some way by AppsFlyer, I question what that actually means. But also, does it mean that actually, while there's backlash, does it also mean that they are basically setting their stalls out, all four of them are setting their stalls out saying, we need AppsFlyer in this industry. We can't do this measurement ourselves. Certainly when it comes to, because we're all walled gardens, right? Certainly when it comes to cross network measurement, we're not able to provide what AppsFlyer can provide. Rather than like, it would have been insane for one, oh, they couldn't have afforded to, but one person, one of those to have bought AppsFlyer, because that takes neutrality out of it. And then we enter a whole other different ball game that would cause problems across all the different ecosystems that exist. So this had to kind of happen. And maybe it's them sort of coming out and saying, yeah, no, we need AppsFlyer and we want to kind of help maintain its neutrality, maintain its independence and maintain its growth. So that's why we're going to invest in it, because it's because the industry requires it, including us, the giant walled gardens.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions in that. And it's,
there are, I mean, there are, yeah.
The independent
side. I'm speculating a lot.
Yeah, it's a difficult circle to square, that one, in terms of the independence and the neutrality of it. Like you say, once they've bought in and they've had to come out defending the neutrality of it, it's, you do raises some flags in terms of the neutrality that remains and how it's actually going to work in practice. It does, you know, again, as with the Vibeco story, it does lend itself to a wider discussion around the investment and the M&A around ad tech at the moment. It's a hot area. It really is.
Do you remember the flow chart from a few years ago that was looking at, like, I can't remember what it was, but it was like, oh, Joe Zawadzki. And basically, you know, pick an ad tech founder, any ad tech founder. There's plenty to choose from. Brian O'Kelly, you know, Joe Zawadzki, like, let's put Abby Pryor in there as well. And it was like the flow chart of all the different ad companies they all invest in. And actually, while they all kind of came to be competitive, they all invest in each other. And it was this giant flow chart of, this is what ad tech really looks like. And I think this is an extrapolation of that on a kind of much larger scale, it feels like.
Yep, I saw a similar one to do with AI and all the AI companies and how invested they are in each other and who's got what things in what pockets and what pies. And it's, everyone, everyone's in everything. It's incredible, actually, how it all comes together. But these companies are going big on ad tech. And I know kind of Google and Meta and Unity and Moloco are separate things. They are advertising companies at their cores anyway. But the agencies are going big on ad tech. They're looking at, you know, their own offerings and how the agency and holdco models are changing. It was a lot of the vibe at Cannes as well. It felt, you know, ad tech is where it's at the moment. It was an interesting kind of temperature to take while over there. But yeah, it's again, yeah, the strength of ad tech at the moment is something that continues to be newsworthy.
I agree. And I think, you know, to broaden that, the strength of the growing, possibly strength, I mean, not that I think in real terms and numbers it's grown, but I think in terms of interest it's grown, is the growth of the in-app ecosystem.
Yeah.
And I think that while, because there's so much uncertainty around the role that agentic is going to play in the future of the open internet and the open web, that there's a lot of interest resurfacing around the app ecosystem. And so when you see the likes of Google and Meta, who obviously, you know, are very invested in the app ecosystem anyway, but you see, when you see them investing in a neutral measurement platform, specifically in the in-app environment, it for me is quite telling. And I think it will, again, you know, talk about sit up and listen moments, it's going to make the industry more broadly sort of go, well, that's interesting from an app perspective, because they would never normally, you know, be that overtly invested in app stuff specifically. So the fact that they're doing that, I think, is also quite telling about there being I think we're going to see a lot more eyes on the in-app ecosystem. And I think the in-app ecosystem is certainly going to be very, very interesting over the coming years. It tends to get a bit of a bad rap. It tends to be seen as low quality. And I think the industry themselves, I think, you know, I've heard rumors that some of the big gaming companies, you know, name them, like, you know, you've got Activision Blizzard, you've got, you know, all the different ones that exist, Zynga, all the different ones that exist, are trying to actually try to help, they want to help clean up the image of mobile, of in-app advertising, and clean up the ecosystem and the bad actors, because there are a lot of bad actors that have been allowed to get away with it for far too long, that's impeding the ability to get outside non-endemic grand investment into the in-app environment. And so this, again, could be seen as like another angle into kind of helping clean up the environment.
Yeah, and that's a really important point. And I'm, you know, I don't, at the risk of making it the year of mobile again, I really think in-app is something that we that, you know, we're going to concentrate on. We have a mobile and in-app columnist now. We'll have another feature up in July. We are looking at this stuff because it is interesting to the industry and there is potential there. And I think there is potential because of that lack of quality that's sort of been associated with it so far. It's an area that's so, you know, we're all on mobile, like we're all in apps all the time. And it is an area that requires some creative quality and some focus on it. And, you know, like as this news is testament to that, that the companies are sort of opening up to the potential of in-app and what's maybe been missed, even though we've had 15, 20 years of mobile, it's, you know, the in-app ecosystem it's been untended in terms of developing it, growing it and innovating in it. I think people have just, you know, there's always going to be the wariness of interrupting the user experience. That is a massive question in-app, because how do you not be distracting? How do you not annoy someone when they're playing a game? How do you not annoy someone when they're trying to make a purchase in-app? It is a tricky one to get right. But there's renewed focus on it because people are reading that's where the eyeballs are. And it's a generational thing as well. It's not just a young audience who are in-app using it. It's across the board. This is, you know, it is where the future is, I think. So, we'll see more of this kind of thing, I imagine.
Yeah, I think so as well. I think, you know, the measurement perspective, visibility obviously massively dropped in mobile, certainly thanks to Apple and, you know, Ask Not to Track, and that all came out. I think it made a lot of people go, well, actually, the money's going back into open web then, because I can see people much more easily there. Well, that's now becoming more challenged because of LLMs and because we're not seeing directly exactly what's going on and who's coming in from where. That now puts renewed focus onto the in-app ecosystem again. And again, this ties back to, you know, what role does AppsFlyer play in this, you know, as sort of the cross-network measurement side of things, when it is more difficult to see how can they ensure that people actually are kind of understanding what is going on with their investment. I totally agree with you. I think it's going to be a really interesting situation. And I do hate to say about Year of Mobile, but because it feels like it's been the Year of Mobile for the past, since I started in advertising, which we, you know, is a good 15, 16, 17 years ago now. Please no, not again. But also maybe it's starting again.
That's it. It's all coming back around.
Yeah.
Good. Well, it is an area that we will continue covering in that case, as it's interesting. So agreed.
Done. Sorted. Expect to see more in-app content on ExchangeWire. Fantastic.
That's it. You're welcome, yeah. Gal. At the risk of us going on too long, we'll have a quick discussion about Cannes.
Yes, do that, because I didn't get to go and you came back broken. So what happened? Tell me everything.
It was great. Anyone who bumped into me, anyone who I had conversations with over there will have seen me running around with my camera equipment, sweating in the horrendous heat. Every conversation I had started with, fucking hell, it's hot, isn't it? And then we talked about 5 minutes about just how hot it was.
Just to preface this, John absolutely hates the heat anyway, like absolutely can't stand it. So now drop him in Cannes, running around from meeting to meeting, just his worst nightmare.
With a heavy backpack full of the equipment for recording. But no, that is my job and I love my job. The heat doesn't help. But it was a really interesting time to be there this year. On a personal level and from ExchangeWire, we did some great projects with some great companies. You know, it was wonderful to work with OneTag on the video series. Great to work with a Digital Voice on their video series as well, the fruits of which you'll be able to see on the website in the next week or so. Some's already up there, have a look. But in terms of like taking the temperature of Cannes, it was obviously the year of agentic AI. It was the year of AI. Every billboard down the Quozette was plastered with a new AI solution. We've just launched our new AI solution. Here's what our AI can do for you. It's that, you know, that's what the industry wanted to get across this year. It was quite evident from everything that agentic AI, agents, workflows, that was the hot topic. And it was all about the automation of it, all about the efficiency of automation, people wanting to talk about their innovations in the space. And that's what we expected. That's what we really thought this year was going to be about. I did a little LinkedIn post wrapping up my thoughts last week. And what I always will say about Cannes and any major event, you know, we're currently in that kind of Twixmas period between Cannes and ATS or for Exchange Wire. And all the big events, it's about the people. Our industry's always been about the people. People buy people. People talk to people. People like meeting, sharing ideas and exchanging ideas, and Cannes remains thoroughly about that. Like, we had our drink at Marnolan's and you bump into people, the street was filled. And fair enough, they're people you could get a meeting with in London most of the time, but you're actually
there. But you don't though, do you? That's always the joke. Everyone makes the same joke every year about, I could have met you in London. But the fact is, that didn't happen. So it does still remain that place where everyone can, the melting pot where everyone seems to be able to still come together.
Yeah, completely. And it's, you know, and that's when it's in those smaller meetings where, for our industry, the real conversation happens. It is noticeable how ad techy it is now.
More so, you've been a few years in a row now. Do you think it's getting, because it went through, because I haven't been, last time I went was 2024. Yes, I missed last year. I didn't go this year. But I've been for kind of a few years after that. And it went through a bit of a lull. And that's when, obviously, Cannes Lions were trying to stop ad tech coming, basically. So everyone was like, oh, I don't know if I want to be there anymore. So it feels like it's going through a massive peak again.
Yes, I think that's come back with a vengeance after that period. I mean, first year I went was 2017. And that was like, you know, the big publishers were being helicoptered in, and it was all kind of, it was still lavish from their point of view. And Cannes always an interesting bellwether in how that's changing and where the money is. And now, you know, it's the Free Will Beach is the big party. The Yahoo party is the big one of the week. Spotify have their, like, by the way, absolutely impossible to get into party. I don't know who gets in there. We had people who said they were VVPs and still not allowed into the Spotify party. Laura and I exhausted every angle we could and not allowed anywhere near it. So, the ad tech players are making their mark now. I did have a really nice moment I'll go into quickly. I had a nice moment of kind of being taken back to the Cannes Lions side of things. I was staying a little bit out of town in Cannes La Bocca. Went to the train station in the morning thinking I was going to get my 3-minute train into the heart of Cannes. And, you know, no trains were running between 10 and 1 p.m. So 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. So there was me on the platform, bright red in the sunshine. And I bumped into two younger Spanish guys who were there with their Cannes Lions passes and stuff. And they looked absolutely devastated and entirely unsure of what to do. And I just said, look, guys, I've got an Uber. Like, here's my pass. I'm not just a randomer. Like, jump in my Uber if you want a lift into town. And they were very, very grateful. But they were the Spanish entrants to the Young Lions. They were for Ogilvy in Barcelona. And the Young Lions, for those unaware, it's a competition where they are given a brief on, I think it's a Tuesday of Cannes. They get a brief and they have 24 hours to go away and come back and present their pitch for the brief. And it was really nice to just be reminded of that, because obviously I'm in ad tech is my world. It is my people. It's where I'll spend all the time. It's the companies that I'm talking to. It's our area of interest. But it is just a piggyback on the Cannes Lion Festival of Creativity.
Yeah. But again, you know, we've talked about this recently, like ad tech helps the creative industry
absolutely,
go around.
Yeah.
And so, you raise a really good point though, because they do still seem very separate. And there's not much coming together of the two. It's like there's the Cannes Lion event, which is all about creativity, and then everything in the peripheral is all about ad tech, and never the two shall meet.
Yeah, and that's, you know, I'm literally on record as saying how much I believe the ad tech industry should be considered part of the creative industries. Like, you know, we are the pipes and the commercial side that makes all this stuff possible, and the reason this creativity is made and encouraged is ad tech gets it to the people it's meant to be seen by. It's so important. But there was something in meeting those two guys who were, you know, idealistic and creative and were going
Bless
to the
them.
Palais. And they didn't, you know, apart from asking me whether I had a hookup for Spotify, which was fair play to them. I had to disappoint them and tell them absolutely not. Of course I don't. It just reminded me that there are a certain side of the industry who aren't there for the same reason we are, even though we're all intertwined. And it was nice to see, amid all my grousing and complaining about the heat and the sun and working too hard, that there's some people who are genuinely, like, at the start of their careers, that the creative side genuinely means an awful lot to. And I like that we play a role in putting that stuff out there as well. I like that, you know, ad tech is involved in that side, and it's one not to forget. And yeah, it's why, amongst a lot of other different chance meetings and fun times that were had in Cannes, like that will be a takeaway, is these, just seeing a little glimpse of idealism amongst it all.
That would be referred to in advertising speak as a micro moment, I believe.
It would.
So there you go. You had your own little micro moment.
Yeah. I thanks to the poor running of transport, I optimized my micro moments.
There you go. Love it.
And enjoyed it. But yeah, top line is agentic AI is all anyone wanted to talk about on the record. The programmatic open web is not dead, and there is still an awful lot of opportunity in the programmatic open web and the open internet. I think that was something that came across in other conversations. Mm. We'll all be back on the Riviera with the Rosé doing the same thing again, I'm sure, next year. I'm looking forward to it.
Alongside the robots.
Yeah, well, maybe they'll just go instead. Although maybe their circuits are even worse wired for the heat than mine. I'm not sure.
Possibly. I saw a viral video that in Poland, a robot, I think he was called Anthony or Edward or something, and he took it upon himself just to chase out the wild boars in the town that he lives in, and he's got this robot going, get away, and then when they left he goes, thank you, goodbye, in Polish, obviously, which I won't try attempt to speak, but maybe they'll employ robots next year to kind of get all the ad tech people out, just so and you've got robots running down the street trying to shoo the ad tech people away from Cannes.
That's it, maybe, or just guarding Spotify Beach. Maybe there'll just be an army of army of Anthonys.
Exactly. Yeah.
Stopping interlopers trying to get wristbands. it is easy to be jaded and churlish about trips to Cannes, and I count myself in that. I can say, oh, it's too hot. It's a lot of running around, but you come away, and it's still a privilege. It's still a great place to go. You meet wonderful people who are the lifeblood and backbone of this industry. And always will be. There will always be a human hand in whatever we do with agentic AI. And that's what in-person events are for. And I'm very much looking forward to doing the same in Singapore next week.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you'll be more broke than me because you just had to have a week in Cannes. So I'll turn up fresh as a daisy. But I'm very excited, again, for various reasons. I've not been to ATS Singapore for past three. I've missed the past three, which I've been devastated about. So I'm so excited to be back again. I've had some really interesting chats over the past couple of weeks on my panels. I'm sure you have too, John. And there's so many like highlights I'm looking forward to. One in particular, we'll be seeing Andrew Casale, Index Exchange CEO, speaking on stage with Kieran. He's never been to Singapore before. He's never even set foot in the country, let alone set foot on the ATS stage. So that's going to be a massive thing. And I think he's one of the most interesting people in, probably the most interesting person in ad tech right now. So I'm very much excited to see what he has to say on stage there. And there's, some cracking content. Like I said, I'm really excited about the panelists that I've got from me personally. We've got a really, really strong list of people going to be in the room as well. We've already got over 1,000 people registered. And there's still 7 days to go. So who knows where that will end up? I'm very excited.
I can't wait.
What particular highlight are you looking forward to?
So I love my panels. I've had some really good briefing calls so far with some people I've known for a while, people I'm fond of anyway. But on my, I've got a panel on creators and the creator economy.
Nice.
And we've got a creator on my panel. And I had a briefing call with Zach.
You do, yeah.
He's representing the creator. And I was talking to him about, how it all started and what he's doing. And he just casually dropped in. He was like, yeah, we have a kind of a small following of around 18 million. I was like, okay, this is going to be an interesting conversation. But he is so knowledgeable about, he's a data guy basically. And he runs their account, their YouTube and TikTok with his partner, do funny videos, very, very popular, as 18 million will show you. But he's all about the data behind it and the trends and the numbers, and was just a fascinating chat already. And that was just a prelim briefing call. So, I'm just looking forward to being there and being in Singapore and then having conversations like that. I think it's always one of the best weeks of the year. And the content this year is spectacularly good, even if we do say so ourselves.
I mean, we're very, very biased, but no, I agree with you. Like I said, I've had some really conversations, and we've got Stellar Race kind of in the first part of the day that are bringing, they're bringing HSBC with them, WPP, Omnicom, Broadsign. Really fascinating chat about the rise of immersive out of home. And I think that will apply, obviously, like out of home in Singapore is fascinating anyway. And certainly from Stellar Race, owned by SMRT, it's going to be really interesting to hear what they have to say about how they're embracing immersive out of home. And I look forward to kind of taking that conversation back with me to Europe as well, where there's lots of other stuff happening, even in a very different environment, very, very different set of circumstances in the UK and across Europe. So it's, again, it's always lovely to be able to go over and have these conversations, bringing my European lens with me. And then they always appreciate hearing that as well, because like they obviously see it from kind of their perspective within Southeast Asia and within APAC more generally. And then being able to use that and take that lens back with me to Europe afterwards to really sort of compare and contrast. And it's really good to have the global lens on things. And there's, like I said, some fascinating stuff with retail media. We've got Halion speaking on that. And also a really interesting conversation that will feature IAS, the Calang Group, StarHub and Omnicom talking about the future of the tech stack and whether you should be building, buying or partnering. And that's really interesting to look at kind of, you know, how AI is really kind of flipping everything and kind of what the future looks like in terms of what the role of the agency is, what the role of the brand is, what the role of the tech supplier is in that environment. Like that's again going to be a really good conversation that I'm really excited about.
Excellent. Yeah, a lot to be excited about, I'd say.
Yeah.
I'm also doing a few filmings over there. We're doing a few coffee wids in Singapore. I'm very much looking forward to seeing my old friend Raj Parekh from MediaCorp in Singapore, who I met in my first trip there, I think, and we've remained in touch. We have got Penelope Siraj from Brain Labs, who again is a wonderful person. We've known
old friend of Exchange Wire as well. Yeah,
yeah, back on stage this year, I think, and Matt Farrington of Dentsu, who's always a brilliant chat on any subject. So we're banking the content. We're all very excited.
Yeah, can't wait. Looking forward to seeing you all.
Before I say excited one more time, I'm going to cut that short, Lindsay. So thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. It's been a lovely little chat.
I said it would be. Lovely little chat. And thank you all for listening to our lovely little chat. We'll be back with a lovely little chat from Singapore next week. Thank you.
You've been listening to the Mad Tech Podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.